You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Packers give a monster extension to corner Jaire Alexander. This one worth 4 years, $84 million. His AAV skyrockets to the top of the NFL at the defensive back position. As you can see, he's now ahead of guys like Denzel Ward, Jalen Ramsey, Marlon Humphrey, and Marshawn Lattimore.
Ah, yes, what a great Monday we had as Packer fans as Jaire Alexander is inked to a new contract. And, man, I tell you, the cornerback position for so long was so weak for the Green Bay Packers, and now it's obviously became a strength in the last several years, and it's going to continue to be that way with the addition of Jaire Alexander, obviously re-signing Rasul Douglas to a three-year deal, and, of course, you got Stokes still left on a three-year deal with a fifth-year option as well, 3 years left on his rookie contract. But welcome into Packers Total Access. I'm your host, Clayton Bailey. You can check us out on Packernet.com. You can find me on Twitter at Packers_Access. And you know what, guys? In honor of the great news that we got, that Jaire Alexander signs this contract, obviously we're going to jump in and break down that contract a little bit. You know, the details that have been released so far. And but also, I thought, you know, what better way to celebrate with our history segment than to highlight one of the greatest corners to ever play the game of football, not just for the Packers, but the entire NFL, and that's Mr. Herb Adderley from the Lombardi era. So we're going to talk about Herb Adderley's career here just a little bit. We're going to break down a little bit of the Jaire Alexander contract, and we actually had a listener question as well through the DMs on Twitter. And the young man, I'm assuming it's a young man by the name O'Ben, but he actually asked a question of kind of what separates, what's your view? I don't know the question right offhand. I'll read it on the air when we get to that segment. But in a sense, it was what justifies a good rookie season. You know, a lot of people, obviously you get your T.J. Watts that come into the league, they perform great. It's easy to look at that and go, that's a great rookie season, right? Same thing last year with Micah Parsons in Dallas. But that's not the only good performances. You know, what makes a good, solid draft pick? You know, and more specifically for the first round. So what we're going to do is kind of go back and look at PFF grades for the last several years for first round picks that we feel like turned out to be good ball players for the Packers, and no better one to highlight than Jaire Alexander. So we'll kind of look at what his PFF grade as far as progress was, you know, from his rookie year up to his current day grade there with PFS. So that's going to kind of be the show. Let's waste no more time and get right into Herb Adderley's story. And Herb Adderley is one of the greatest cornerbacks to ever play in the National Football League. And they're really, we can't in a 15, 20-minute segment do justice for just the impact that Herb made when it comes to the Green Bay Packers and the history of the league. But we're going to do our best. We're going to kind of tell his story here. If you're, you know, listening to this and you've never heard of Herb Adderley, it's probably because you're a younger fan. You know, if you're over the age of 40, there's a good chance you've heard it. If you're over the age of 50, first of all, it's so awesome that you're listening to our podcast. I think that, you know, that older group, and not to be disrespectful, I just have I have so much respect for those people, and it fires me up when I hear stories like Jacob talking about how his grandpa, while he's working in the barn up there in Wisconsin, is actually listening to the show. So shout out to Jacob's grandpa, and appreciate you listening, and appreciate all the hard work you've done over the years keeping the country going. We know for every one of him, there's thousands of more, probably hundreds of thousands of more that are doing the same type of labor and keeping this country moving, and we appreciate it. But Herb Adderley, let's jump right in. All right. He was born on June 8th, 1939, right? And I'm going to kind of give you a brief overview of his early life. He was born and raised in Philadelphia, born and raised on the playgrounds where he spent most of his day. No, it doesn't say that. Adderley's parents were Charles and Reva White Adderley. He graduated from Northeast High School in 1957, where he starred in football, basketball, and baseball, and he won all-city honors in all three. In college, he attended Michigan State in East Lansing and played football under Coach Duffy Daugherty, primarily as a halfback. He led the Spartans in rushing yards as a junior in 1959 and pass receptions in both 1959 and 1960. It says here that Adderley was the co-captain of the team as a senior and made the All-Big Ten Conference team and played in the East-West Shrine Game, the Coach's All-American, and the Coach All-Star Games. He was picked for All-Michigan State University team in 1970. So right off the bat, you see that, you know, although Herb is known as a cornerback, he was an absolute star in college at the halfback position and also being able to catch the football. Now, in his professional career, Adderley was selected by the Green Bay Packers in the first round of the 1961 NFL draft, the 12th overall pick. He began his professional career as halfback on offense, but was later switched to defense because the Packers already had eventual Hall of Fame runners Paul Hornung and Jim Taylor. Think about this. A first-round pick, 12th overall, was drafted to be a halfback. And on that same team, they already had two future Hall of Famers at running back, you know, halfback and fullback with that Lombardi offense in Paul Hornung and Jim Taylor. Just what a stacked team. And you could tell that, you know, from the previous episode where we talked about, you know, the scout, the greatest scout in the history of Green Bay in Jack Vanisi. You know, he said, we actually played the soundbite, we talked about it, how he said, I don't care if we draft three tackles or two guards or multiple players at the same position, because we're going to draft players that are good football players, because you always need more good football players. And this right here just shows it. They were already stacked at running back, but they continued to draft. And this was after Vanisi had already passed. I'm almost certain that he passed before the 1960 season. However, it's obvious that the foundation he laid in place with the scouting department and how they draft and that whole mindset as Lombardi stepped in was still the same. They were taking multiple players at the same position because they were just good football players. I think that is that's awesome that tradition continued. It says he began as halfback on offense but later switched because the Packers already had eventual Hall of Fame runners Paul Hornung and Jim Taylor. Adderley was first moved to cornerback to replace injured teammate Hank Grimminger. And you always hear about these type of stories. You know, you hear about it with Lou Gehrig, right, stepping in for Wally Pipp. You hear about Brett Favre coming in for Don Majkowski. When Don Majkowski went down, the Magic Man, everybody immediately thought, oh my God, our season's over. And then lo and behold, bam, here comes Brett Favre, right? You hear about these stories all the time, and this one is no different. He moved to cornerback because he had to replace injured teammate Hank Grimminger against Detroit on Thanksgiving Day and made an interception in that game that set up the game-winning touchdown. In 1962, the move became permanent, and Adderley went on to become an all-NFL selection five times in the 1960s. Packers coach Vince Lombardi remarked, quote, I was too stubborn to switch him to defense until I had to. Now when I think of what Adderley means to our defense, it scares me to think of how I almost mishandled him. Those thin threads that really, you know, kind of dictate how someone's career goes and even a dynasty goes. Because if Adderley's not playing cornerback, I think it's pretty safe to say if you don't have a Hall of Fame cornerback on the field, you know, history probably would have unfolded a little bit different there. It says Adderley recorded 39 interceptions in his 9 seasons with the Packers. He held the Green Bay records for interceptions returned for touchdowns in a career with 7, tied with someone we won't mention his name because he's not important to Packers history anymore. And then it was eventually broken by Charles Woodson and holds the records for interceptions returned for touchdowns in 1 season. That was 3 in 1965. Adderley started for the Packers from 1961 to 1969, then played 3 seasons, 1970 through 72, with the Dallas Cowboys. While with the Packers, he won rings for 5 NFL championships and wins in the first 2 Super Bowls. So he has 5 NFL championships with the Packers and also was on those 2 first Super Bowl winning teams. And you might be asking, well, what kind of role did he play in those big games? It says Adderley was a factor in the Super Bowl II win over the Oakland Raiders, intercepting a pass by Raiders quarterback. I can't say the name. I'm too redneck to say the name. Daryl Laminicha, maybe? In the fourth quarter and returning it 60 yards for a touchdown to put the game away. It was the first Super Bowl touchdown scored on an intercepted pass. So he has the first touchdown pick six, right? The first pick six in Super Bowl history. That's pretty cool. Adderley had a strained relationship with Phil Bankston by the end of the latter's second season at the helm. If you guys know, Phil Bankston actually took over for Vince Lombardi when Vince Lombardi left. First of all, he stepped down as head coach, stayed on for one more year as general manager, then went on to the Washington Redskins. At the time, they were called the Redskins. So he kind of had a falling out with Phil Bankston, probably was just so spoiled by being coached by Vince Lombardi, who wouldn't be, right? He accused Bankston of keeping him off the Pro Bowl team in 1969 and requested to be traded after a holdout. After a holdout in 2 weeks before the start of the regular season, he was sent from the Packers to the Cowboys in 1970. So he also became a vital cog in its doomsday defense, assisting the Cowboys to a Super Bowl appearance in 5 and a win in 6. So this guy actually won another Super Bowl with the Dallas Cowboys. Unbelievable. What an amazing, amazing cornerback. It says, Adderley admired Packers head coach Vince Lombardi, but not Tom Landry of the Cowboys. Benched during the middle of the 1972 season, Adderley was traded to the Los Angeles Rams in the summer of 1973. He opted to not report and retired on August 7th after a dozen seasons in the NFL. Along with the Patriots, Tom Brady, and 2 Packer teammates, offensive lineman Fuzzy Thurston and Forrest Gregg, Adderley is the only of 4 one of the only four players in pro football history to play on 6 world championship teams. However, in a revised edition of the Instant Replay and memoir by Packer teammate Jerry Kramer, Adderley is quoting as saying, quote, "I'm the only man with a Dallas Cowboys Super Bowl ring who doesn't wear it. I'm a Green Bay Packer." And in his 12 seasons, Adderley recorded 48 interceptions, which he returned for 1,046 yards and 7 touchdowns, an average of 21.8 yards per interception return. He also recovered 14 fumbles, returning them for 65 yards, and returned 120 kicks for 3,080 yards and 2 touchdowns. Post-NFL, it says, after Adderley retired, he returned to Philadelphia to broadcast football games for Temple University and the Philadelphia Eagles. He also coached as an assistant at Temple and with the Philadelphia Bell of the World Football League under head coach, his old teammate, Willie Wood, safety for the Packers. Adderley was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1980. A year after his induction into Canton, Adderley became a member of the Packer Hall of Fame. In 1981, he also was chosen for the AFL-NFL 1960 through 1984 All-Star Team. Adderley's cousin's grandson, first cousin twice removed, Nasir Adderley, was drafted by the Los Angeles Chargers in the second round of the 2019 draft. Adderley died on October 30th, 2020, at the age of 81. What an amazing career. I mean, you're talking about a guy who was an offensive weapon in college. Vince Lombardi switched him over to defense, didn't even know what he was doing, had to do it, was forced to do it because of injury. If that injury hadn't occurred, then he may have sat on the bench third string behind Paul Hornung and Jim Taylor, and we never would have seen this Hall of Fame career unfold where a man won that many championships and will go on to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. An amazing, amazing man, an amazing corner, probably the greatest cornerback in the history of the Green Bay Packers. I feel very, very confident in saying that, obviously. So now we're going to take a quick break, and we'll get into the next segment.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for 5. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
513 declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, so the big news that dropped yesterday on Monday was the extension being signed by cornerback Jair Alexander. And Ian Rappaport said the Packers and Jair Alexander have an agreement in principle on a four-year, $84 million extension, source said. He gets a whopping $31 million in year one. Okay, so now I'm going to kind of fall back here a second and go to Ken Ingles on Twitter, who, as you guys know, he's a great follow. I don't agree with all of his takes, but man, the guy does such a good job quickly getting numbers out there on Twitter as far as contracts go. And this is what he said in a tweet yesterday, shortly after that was reported. He said, based on early reports, Jair Alexander's cap hits for the first 3 years should be approximately, in 2022, $7.076. That's $6.2 million in savings right now. In 2023, it's going to be $19.9 million. In 2024, $22 million. So initially, I thought this was going to be a front-loaded contract. But like Ken says, let's see where things land once the dust settles and all incentives and, quote, up-tos have been sorted out. But early indications are this obviously frees up a ton of money, or a little bit of money, I should say, in 2022, this season. But then when you're talking about the next 2 years of cap hits, this is, like I said, there may be more up-tos, but at the moment, $19.9 million and $22 million for an all-pro corner, a Pro Bowl perennial, right? Year in and year out, the guy's making the Pro Bowl. I feel like that's a fair deal for Jair Alexander, and I love the fact that they got it done quick. You don't have to have this being held over his head during the season. We all know how that kind of went sour there with Devontae Adams, which Ian Rappaport talked about yesterday as well on the Pat McAfee show, that the Packers actually offered Devontae well over what the Las Vegas Raiders offered him. So for all those negative Nancys out there saying they didn't want to pay Devontae, once again, more confirmation, Devontae went where he wanted to go. He took less money to go to the Las Vegas Raiders. But again, you've got to understand, and this is something that I've had to kind of understand myself and deal with, because I am a big front office guy. I love Brian Gutekunst. I love how the Packers handle business. They did mishandle that Devontae deal. In hindsight, I'm kind of like, man, I'll tell you what, I think it's a better thing that it didn't work out, because this extension may not happen. Obviously, you don't re-sign Rasul Douglas if it happens. Devondre Campbell doesn't get re-signed if that happens. Jerron Reed probably doesn't get signed if that happens. Just a lot of dominoes that fell in a different area, you know, just because Devontae decided to move on. And I really think it was one of those things that it worked out in the Packers' favor. Only time will tell, you know. If we struggle on offense this year because we don't have a big target, then it's going to be easy to look back and go, you know what? Losing Devontae was a big deal. If Devontae goes to Vegas and he doesn't perform, you know, without Aaron Rodgers, and our offense, you know, doesn't sputter that much, and we finish with a top 10 offense and an even more dominant defense, kind of looks like the Packers came out a little bit better. Well, you know, only time will tell. But when it comes to Jair Alexander, essentially what you've got now, guys, earlier in the season, the offseason, I should say, we talked about on this podcast that nickel defense is what you're going to be in the majority of the time with just the 11 personnel that's used across the league. And even when people go to base sometimes, at times, you know, nickel is even used. So you want all of your money tied up on both offense and defense in nickel and 11 personnel, right? Three wide receiver sets. So when you look at the defensive side of the ball now for the Packers, look at what they've done. They locked up Preston Smith at the edge. You still had Rashawn Gary, right? They went out and got another defensive tackle in case the draft didn't work out. Lo and behold, they get a three-technique tackle, primarily three-technique tackle there with Wyatt in the draft. But before that, they signed Jaron Reed, right? So you've got your two edge defenders. You've got your two interior defensive linemen. And then in the middle, what did they do? They re-signed Devondre Campbell, and then they go out and use a first-round pick on Quay Walker, right? So your linebacking core is set. And now look at the cornerback position. You've got Jaire Alexander, Rasul Douglas, and Eric Stokes. Jaire now inking a four-year contract. Guys, that means that those three corners are under contract for the next 3 years. Even further, but you know, Rasul Douglas signed a three-year deal. So for the next 3 years, if indeed they decide they don't want to move on from him and you know, free up cap, if they want to move on from Rasul, if they don't, you have your three corners that are starting in that nickel defense, whether it's a 2-4-5, a 3-3-5, whatever it is you're wanting to run, they're set there. And then at the safety position, what did they do? They pick up the fifth-year option of Darnell Savage, and you've got Amos under contract for another year. So the defense is set. The nickel defense is completely set. It's bolstered with rookies who are going to kind of take on more of a role next year. The future looks bright for this defense in Green Bay, and I couldn't be more excited about it. You know, it's funny, you know, you lose Davante Adams, and Goody immediately shifts his focus to, okay, let's make sure this defense stays intact. Let's bolster it up a bit. That way, we don't have to put all this pressure on the offense. You know, if we come out and we're only giving up, you know, 13 points a game, 17 points a game, guys, it's going to be a good year. Aaron Rodgers is going to know how to manage the game in a sense where he can go out and score just enough points for this team to rack up some wins. I'm absolutely fired up about this defense, and I know I'm not the only one. It seems to be the big talking point this offseason. But once again, kudos to Brian Gutekunst and getting that deal done. Now we're on to the next, right? Now what's on the horizon is Rashawn Gary. And if they can lock him up, you know, with Preston Smith getting his five-year deal, the defense is in a great, great spot, guys. We got Kenny locked up, was it last year or the year before? So the thing that stands out to me now is the big question, is Darnell Savage going to go back to playing at that extremely high level that he did 2 years ago? Or does he play at the same level he did last year? And if he does, then the next hole we need to fill is safety. I'm hoping Darnell Savage returns to that previous form where he was, graded out, you know, fairly high with PFF and just a solid player there at free safety. Because that free safety position is very, very important in my opinion. You want a guy who's rangy there in the middle playing center field. And Amos has done an excellent job in and out of the box. Great, great player. There's something about that free safety. You know, when you think of the great defenses, let me put it this way. When you think of the great defenses, you know, the Baltimore Ravens come to mind, right? Name a cornerback that played for the Baltimore Ravens. You're probably sitting there going, what was it? Yeah, there was a guy. What was his name? McAllister. I think his name was McAllister, right? Now, let me ask you this question. Who played free safety for the Baltimore Ravens? You immediately think Ed Reed. Ed Reed was a key cog for that defense. And that's the only thing that I think the Packers may be missing with this defense. Everything else looks fantastic across the board. But it's, okay, what is Darnell Savage going to do? Now, the beautiful thing is, like we talked about before on this podcast, he's in a contract year, right? He's playing for a new contract. You pick up that option. Now he's working for that next deal. He don't want to be a lame duck safety going into next year. Like, now he's got some extra motivation. I'm really excited to see what Darnell Savage does because we know he's got the physical tools. He's got the traits, right? He had them coming out of college. He showed them when he first came into the league. We just now, 1 year under his belt with the new defensive coordinator, let's see what happens. Isn't it amazing that this time last year, people like Ross Tucker, who I have a great deal of respect for. This is not to bash Ross Tucker. Ross Tucker is one of the few people in media that I really, really enjoy listening to. I think he gives honest takes. But he didn't like the idea of them moving on from Pettine, you know, the Packers moving on from Pettine and bringing in Joe Barry. And now he's man enough to admit, wow, I was wrong. Look at what this addition of Joe Barry has done. Well, you got to take into consideration, and I'm speaking to myself more than anybody, I'm real hard on Darnell Savage, but again, that was the first year with a new defensive coordinator. You know, there's going to be some tweaks. There's going to be some changes there, right? Maybe not a whole lot, but enough. So when you're playing that deep safety position where you like to play center field, whether you're in a cover one or you're playing that deep middle zone in a cover three or whatever, you know, there's going to be some adjustments that need to be made with a new defensive coordinator in the house. But the cool thing about Quay Walker being added as well is the fact that Devondre Campbell has all the responsibility of running that defense. Quay Walker can just go out there and be a playmaker and occasionally be able to blitz the quarterback, use some stunts, some twists up the middle. You know, I liked what Carolina did early last year. A lot of people forget that the Carolina Panthers started the year off very strong on defense. And there was film being broke down that they were using stunts in the running game. In the defensive running game, they were using stunts up front to really cut off running lanes and attack that offensive line from a different angle that most defenses don't, you know, when it comes to playing the run. And I'm just very excited. I could go on and on and on about this, talking X's and O's and personnel and what adjustments Barry may make this year. I just know this. I cannot wait to get to Lambeau this year and watch him play the Rams. I know Jacob's going with me. You guys probably heard. We've got a couple other surprises in the works. Going to be a few other people joining us, but we'll announce that at a later time. But it's going to be a great year, guys. I'm really, really excited. But, again, Jair Alexander under contract. Bam, new extension. Got that out of the way. It's not going to be hanging over our head for the season. It's going to be a great training camp. So, now let's go ahead and move on to our final segment here, and we're going to get you out of here a little bit early today, guys. All right, guys, we got a question in the DMs on Twitter from Oben. We're going to call him Benny, all right? Ben hits us up in a DM on Twitter. He says, "Sup, man. We say hello where I'm from, but it's all good. I think I know what that means. Sup, man. Just getting caught up on your pods and had a question. What is a realistic expectation for a, quote, good rookie season? P.S. I have no idea what the Roadhouse reference means. Thanks." Well, first of all, let's attack the Roadhouse reference. I'm not going to damage your brain any by trying to explain what it even means. It's not even important, okay? It's trust me, you're going to save some brain cells with me not explaining it to you. Now, back to your question. You know, just getting caught up on your pods. All right, so what is a realistic expectation for a good rookie season? That's the question. And it's a great question because I think fans have such a different view on this, and it's a good thing, right? You know, everybody doesn't have to think the same way. That's what we kind of pride ourselves on with this show here. Is I don't ever want to come across like, I cannot stand it when I listen to podcasts and people, they have their opinion. Podcast hosts have their opinions. Well, this is how it is, and if you don't agree, then you're just wrong. I think that's silly. I think the second that you stop trying to learn from other people, you're going backwards. It's just that simple. Now, in my opinion, let me give my opinion of what I think constitutes a good rookie season. I want availability. I want playing time. And I want a good set of consistency, I guess is the best way of putting it. All right, what do I mean by availability? It means staying healthy. You know, Bill Belichick has preached from day one. You guys know I'm a big Bill Belichick fan. He's preached from day one that the top ability, the most important ability a player can have is availability. Okay, availability and accountability is what he says. But let's talk about availability. It doesn't matter how talented you are if you cannot stay on the field, right? If you cannot stay on the field, your talent means nothing to the football team. Absolutely nothing. You know, if you're in and out of the lineup constantly, you know how much stress that puts on a defensive coordinator or an offensive coordinator? You cannot build continuity in a unit if you can't stay on the field. And some of you are rolling your eyes right now going, "I know, Clayton, I know you." You know, like I'm speaking to you like you're in third grade. He asked my opinion. This is me. Availability number one. You got to stay healthy. You know the old saying, you can't make the club in the tub. If you're always in the trainer's room and always banged up and can't go and it's always a game time decision, you can't build game plans around that. That's the top ability in my opinion. The next thing is, you know, you talk about availability, right? And then we're going to talk about consistency. What does consistency mean? To me, consistency is, as a rookie player, is not making the big mistakes. And this is not a sexy way of looking at, you know, at the game of football. You know, Ryan did a great job breaking down with SIS, talking about big plays and bust plays and things like that. And I think that stuff is important, but it's not what's most important to me, right? You know, we talked about in the live stream the other night, the reason I'm not as big on Darnell Savage is because he's inconsistent. I want someone who's consistent. It's kind of like that superstar, how do you say it? The whole superstar effect. You know, people love superstars on their team, right? You love the TJ Watts. You love the Aaron Rodgers. You love, you know, the Davante Adams. You love all these players that are quote-unquote superstars. I do too. I think it's crucial to have those at the crucial positions. What are my crucial positions that we talked about? Quarterback, left tackle, and edge defender. I feel like if you have superstars at those places, at those spots, absolutely they are worth the money. Spend it. Every chance you get, make sure that the roster is full of people, you know, players. And it's okay to pay a high salary cap hit to those positions. But every other position, I would much rather have a team full of good players rather than a team with three superstars and the rest being bad players, because it creates inconsistency. So when it comes to a good rookie player, again, a good rookie season, I want consistency and I want availability. And when you look at you know, past rookies, let's kind of go back through the Packers draft history here real quick, and let's look at the rookies that we felt like they were solid. And you don't have to go very far. Last year you had cornerback Eric Stokes, right? You heard everybody talk about how he had a great year. You know, and then again you look at the interceptions and it's like, wow, you know, he only had one interception. How's that a great year? Well, it's because he was consistent. When you look at his PFF grade, it was a 66.3. And when people see that, they're probably thinking that seems kind of low. Not for a rookie. Not for a rookie. We're going to get to Jair Alexander's rookie grade here in just a second, and you'll understand what I'm talking about. But when you talk about the total snaps, the guy had 645 coverage snaps and 289 run defense snaps. Okay, this guy was healthy for the most part. I don't know his entire injury history, but I do know this. He was available all year long. Availability and consistency. That's what's most important. His coverage grade was actually a 67.6, okay? So I think that, well, here again, and you're probably saying, okay, well, you know, how much was he targeted? He was targeted 96 times last year, and he tied fifth in the entire NFL in targets. That's pretty remarkable. Okay, so obviously we're going to skip over Jordan Love with him kind of having that red shirt year last year. Didn't play. Hey, let's pray to sweet baby Jesus he doesn't play much this year too, because if he plays, that means Aaron's hurt, and we do not want no part of that. We know what that's like. So let's go over to our next first-round pick, and that was Rashawn Gary. Okay, so in 2019, he did not play a lot. It's shown his PFF grade is a 54.1. You know how many people were talking like, well, Rashawn Gary, that pick doesn't make any sense. I don't understand why they wasted a first-round pick on him, blah, blah, blah. At the time, they had Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith, right? Everybody said, why are you drafting an edge rusher with your first-round pick when you spent all this money in free agency? I'll tell you why. Just like at the quarterback position, because edge is another crucial position. It's one of those three what I call elite positions, right? Quarterback, left tackle, and edge. Okay, when you look at the edge position, just like the quarterback, the best time, this is Bill Walsh 101, this is Bill Belichick 101, this is anybody who's anyone in the history of football will tell you, the best time to draft a quarterback is when you don't need a quarterback. Ted Thompson said it all the time, and he got laughed at. The best time to draft a quarterback is when you already have a quarterback, okay? The best time to draft a left tackle is when you already have a left tackle. The best time to draft an edge rusher is when you already have edge rushers there, because they've got this model to go after, to go by. A rookie can step in, see how the position's played. Za'Darius Smith has turned into an absolute turd, okay? I think we all agree on that. But when he signed with Green Bay, that dude was a stud on the edge. Preston Smith was stud on the edge coming in, you know, out of free agency. So that first year with Rashawn Gary, his PFF grade was a 54.1, right? But he had minimal snaps. He hardly even cracked the lineup. So let's look at his first year that he actually played, right? The first year that he got meaningful snaps, they started to up his snap total a little bit, okay? That year was 2020, 67.1. That sound familiar? Remember the Eric Stokes grade? I think his coverage grade was right there at 67, a little over, I think it was 67.9 maybe. There you go. Rashawn Gary, 67.1. 2021, again, at this time, we didn't need an edge defender. Last year, what happens? Za'Darius Smith gets hurt. Rashawn Gary, 89.3 elite grade on PFF. Again, you draft players at positions when you don't need players at that position. It's just, it's the way Green Bay has always operated. It goes back all the way back to Jack Vinicius and what he used to say, and we talked about earlier in this episode. You know, they drafted Herb Adderley, you know, as a running back, knowing that they already had two stud running backs because he was a good football player. And the best time to draft someone at a position is when you don't need them. Well, lo and behold, what does Herb Adderley do? He's going to have a Hall of Fame career as a cornerback. I think it's so cool. You know, here with Rashawn Gary, if he'd been thrust into a starting role, who knows what would have happened to his confidence? Who knows what would have happened to his technique? He couldn't have sat back and watched Z and Preston Smith do it the right way and go, oh, okay, that makes sense. And then you step into a role and off to the races. But I think it's important to mention that the first year that he's seen meaningful snaps, he graded out as a 67. I'm going to tie all this together because we're going to go back to the question, remember, was what is a realistic expectation for a good rookie season? 2020 was basically acted as Rashawn Gary's rookie season, if you will. He finished with a 67 PFF grade, just like Eric Stokes did. Now let's go back to our next first-round draft pick and how they performed their rookie year. You'd have to go back to 2016, and it was Kenny Clark. Guess what Kenny Clark's PFF grade was? A 67.3. The following year, 2017, Kenny makes a huge jump to 87.3, an elite grade. So again, just like Rashawn Gary, finished that first year where he's seen considerable playing time, finished in the 60s, the upper 60s, PFF grade. The very next year, stepped into a starter row, boom, blew up 87.3. Happened with Rashawn Gary. Now we're going into year two with Stokes. So I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting really, really excited. The fact that he finished in the 60s, and some people would look at that grade and go, wow, he underperformed. No, he didn't. Rookies perform at a different level. They're, you know, when they step into that starting role and they see that significant playtime increase, it takes a little bit of getting used to the speed of the NFL, if you will. Okay, we accidentally skipped over one. That was Darnell Savage. He was drafted in 2019. And his rookie season, he finished at, you heard it right, a 67.1. In 2020, he jumped to a 75.3. And then, of course, last year, he had a setback. So, to answer your question, Ben, to me, the way that we're going to be able to gauge this rookie class, now I will say, first of all, Devontae Wyatt is the first defensive lineman that we've drafted in the first round, obviously, since Kenny Clark. It kind of shows, you know, they don't do that often. However, when they have, Kenny was a home run, in my opinion, right? So I'm looking for Devontae Wyatt to finish there in the 60s. If he finishes in the 60s, PFF grade, he sees significant playing time, and he stays healthy. That, to me, is a successful rookie campaign. Okay, that is, you know, and just how you ask the question, right? What is a realistic expectation for a rookie? That's exactly what it is to me, okay? Again, that's been tried time and time again when looking at the PFF grades and kind of what to expect from a rookie. I think that's a very, very reasonable approach. Now, with Quay Walker, obviously, we haven't drafted an inside linebacker in the first round since A.J. Hawk. So again, that's what I look at when looking at a rookie campaign, you know, what justifies a good rookie season. I'm looking for availability. I'm looking for consistency. And I think that's laying a foundation, a base. To me, what it says about that rookie if they're finishing there in the 60s of PFF and they're available, it's telling me that they're playing somewhat consistent, okay? They're not finishing with a 40-something, you know, PFF grade. They're not making those huge mistakes because, you know, as Ryan pointed out the other night on the live stream and a couple other people as well as on his podcast, PFF really, really caters to consistency. You make one or two boneheaded plays and it really screws up the PFF grade. I personally appreciate that. I like that aspect. And I'm all about consistency. You know, you guys know I'm a traditional business owner. We actually launched two new businesses this last year. Well, technically 2020. And, you know, one of the things that we focus on when we launch a business is, all right, what's the niche going to be? You know, it may be this huge, broad idea. Like, to give you an example, we launched a charcuterie business. I don't want to bore you guys with too much details, but long story short, we launched a charcuterie business. And the goal initially was, okay, we want to be a catering service. Okay, we want to provide a catering service because charcuterie, if you guys don't know, we down here in the South, I call them fancy Lunchables. That's basically what they are. People will pay top dollar for this beautiful wooden board with a bunch of meat and cheese and you know, little treats on it, things like that. It just absolutely blew up. But at the same time, in that process, we stay consistent with that, but we didn't take our eye off of, okay, what's the long game? Well, the long game ended up, okay, we found ourselves catering weddings more than anything. Well, in that process, we found out that there's a real big shortage for wedding planners. So we launched that into a wedding planning business along with that charcuterie business. So again, that would have never happened if we didn't stay consistent with that charcuterie business right off the bat. And I draw that parallel with football, and it's anything in life. Anything you're going to be successful at, you've got to get the basics down. You've got to get a foundation in place. You've got to put yourself in a position where you're consistently making good decisions. You're consistently, in football, making plays. And the big plays will come in time. You know, you got these players like, you know, Ryan talked on the podcast about Tyrone Mathieu, right? The Honey Badger. He had one good year. And everybody, they think of that one good year and they think of this guy as just an excellent safety. He's an all-world safety. No, he's not. He had one good year and he's been extremely inconsistent, right? You give me the consistent football players. You give me 11 players on the field that are going to consistently do what it is they need to do to keep the other team out of the end zone, hold them to field goals, play the long game. You can have those pick sixes all day long. Because one pick six in a season doesn't justify a great year. But someone who plays solid and consistent, you get a team full of those kind of guys, and that's what's going to win you championships. Davante Adams is another parallel with that, guys. Davante Adams was an absolute superstar. He made play after play after play. Lo and behold, we get in the playoffs, right? They decide they're going to double him up, and he's taken completely out of the game. And Aaron chose not to throw to underneath receivers that were open, right? And I think it is somewhat blown out of proportion. I don't think it's just that easy, but it's just an example of if you've got a team full of good players, you can win football games without the superstars. I mean, they literally took two players on the field and took Davante Adams out of the game plan in that 49ers game. And you've seen what happened to the offense. Because the offense all year long and Aaron was geared around, they were built around that connection between Aaron and Davante. It just took one time them saying, I don't care what we got to do. We're taking him out of the game plan. He's going to have to beat us with somebody else. And lo and behold, you know, it's easy to look at the special teams. I harped on it more than anyone. The special teams lost us that game. I don't think anybody's denying that. But the fact that we didn't score more points in that playoff game, kind of ridiculous, especially at home. So not to end the show on a negative note, I'm super excited about this season. It's just when he asked that question, I was going through the DMs and looking at the different questions. I'm like, this right here is worth hitting on because I feel like that's what Goody is really focused on. You know, Rasul Douglas, I'm super excited about the huge plays that Rasul Douglas made, but I want to see Rasul Douglas take that next step in consistent play, right? The fact that Jair, the big thing with Jair's contract extension, guys, that excites me more than anything, is it tells me that shoulder's healthy. There's no way that the Green Bay Packers are going to sign him to that contract if there's any worry whatsoever that shoulder injury that he sustained last year might be long-term. Not that it is long-term, even might be long-term. They're not signing him to that contract. So that tells me Jair is healthy and that absolutely fires me up. So I'm excited for this season. I think it's going to be a great year. I'm really, really eager to see what happens with Alan Lazar. I do want to mention this because it's kind of in the news as well. It was mentioned that Alan Lazar has not signed his RFA tender yet, right? That's the I think it's worth $3.9 million, I believe it is, his restricted free agency tender. Okay, well, the Packers, now that you're beyond a certain point and he still hasn't signed that, the Packers are the only people that can negotiate rights for Alan Lazar. So he's kind of locked in. He's got one option: sign that restricted free agency tender. That's it, right? It says the Packers have the right to reduce that tender to $935,000 on June 15 if he's still unsigned. So I want you to think about this. No one else can negotiate with him because he has not signed the tender. Well, the rules state, the CBA states, that if for some reason they wait until June 15th, the said player, in this case Alan Lazard, decides to wait until June 15 and he still hasn't signed that tender, now the tender immediately decreases to only $935,000. So the CBA, the owners worked into the CBA and these bylaws, this rule that's going to penalize the player for not signing that RFA, in which the CBA was negotiated by the players' union, and they agreed, yes, a team has the right to stamp someone as a restricted free agent at that tender. So what's that mean? It means Lazard is likely looking for a bigger deal, but at the end of the day, the rules are the rules, and the Packers know exactly how to play them. The CBA is definitely stacked against them. That's what it comes down to. So I think I've said from the beginning, I think Lazard is trying to push back a little bit so he can get a bigger contract, and I kind of hope that happens. I'm willing to give Lazard a little bit of money. I think Lazard is a solid wide receiver. He falls into that category, in my opinion. He's nowhere near a superstar, right? But he's a good football player. I want more good football players on the team. Good football players are cheaper than superstar players, and wide receiver is not an elite position, in my opinion. Now, you're probably saying, well, we just paid a cornerback, huge money. That cornerback is a very, very, very special player. He is. And the difference between Jair Alexander and Davante Adams' situation is Davante Adams was quite a bit older than Jair. This is exactly what we talked about in earlier podcasts. And you guys know it. I know I'm preaching to the choir here. I know how intelligent you guys are as Packer fans and football fans, but we know how the Green Bay organization works. They love giving that second contract to players that they draft. They absolutely love it. They did it for Davante. It's just when they get to that third contract is where they really become hesitant, unless it's someone who's an absolute superstar. And in that case, Davante fell into that category. But again, I think it was one of those situations where Aaron still wasn't under contract. They were trying to hammer that out first. They made a list of priorities, and Aaron Rodgers was at the very top. We got to get that guy done, then we'll move on to Davante. And I think in the process, Davante just decided, hey, look, I'm done with this. I don't want to deal with it anymore, and I want to go to Vegas. So it's really cool to see how all of these different contract negotiations kind of draw a parallel, but they compare very well with each other. You can kind of see the contrast between the two. So, I'm really excited. Now what we got to think in the future here, in the very, very near future, Rashawn Gary and Elgton Jenkins. We just got to make sure Elgton Jenkins is healthy, and that knee isn't going to be something that's long-term. And I'm hoping it is, because I really like Elgton Jenkins. I'm a big fan. And Rashawn Gary, I thought I was big on Rashawn Gary. I really did. I think he's an excellent player. I bought into the hype last year. I seen it firsthand. I'm like, this guy's going to be a superstar. But after hearing other Packer fans this year and the guys on the stream, right, and other fans just chatting on Twitter, you guys have me over the moon hyped about Rashawn Gary. Because I kind of looked at him like, okay, yes, he's a great football player. He's going to be a superstar in this league. But you guys have just taken it to a whole other level. And I'm right on board with you, man. You sign me up. You guys have convinced me. So that's definitely a cornerstone that we want in place. Because, again, that edge defender is an elite position. And I think we all agree that Elgton Jenkins is probably the left tackle of the future. I don't think, unless Bakhtiari is willing to take a pay cut next year or the year after, his cap hit number is going to get so inflated. And with him already having knee issues, the ACL and then the water on the knee and all that, I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't see Bakhtiari being on this team in 3 years. So that's why you want to lock Elgton Jenkins into a new contract, get him locked down. That's your left tackle of the future. And while Bakhtiari's hanging on, and if he is willing to negotiate, then that's great. You've got Elgton. You can play at left guard, right tackle, wherever you need to put him. He's just one of those players that's invaluable, in my opinion. But he can be the left tackle of the future because we've seen him play at an elite level last year, filling in for Bach before, of course, he hurt his knee. So I think we're in great position, in great shape. We're in a great position moving forward. I think there's a good mix of different contracts that are taking place right now. And the big thing was, you know, we had 11 draft picks this year, and a lot of people talked about, you know, there's no way they're drafting 11 people. They'll probably end up drafting 6 or 7. That's, you know, they're going to move up in the draft and take one of those top 6 wide receivers. We heard that over and over and over. What did Goody do? Goody did totally the opposite. He traded out one time, came away with 10 picks, and now you have 10 players that are more than likely going to make this roster, and those are 10 players that for 4 years are on very low contracts outside of that first round. And, of course, you know, Christian Watson there being on the brink of creeping into the first round. So we're in great shape. That's what you do with draft capital. That's what you do with draft picks. These are the things that are going to hurt the LA Rams in the next several years because they got all these players on these inflated contracts, and here the Packers have a ton of rookie contracts. You know, you look up at Josh Myers. You know, he didn't play great last year. I think we all would agree with that, right? But the fact that he's on that rookie contract, you've got him locked in. You're not overpaying there. And what's going to happen is, I think, in the next few years, you're going to get in a position where they might make another free agency run when all this money hits and the cap does increase. The Packers are playing the long game, and it's funny because they did go all in last year. And everybody was worried coming into this year that if we don't win now, oh, we're screwed. We're going to have to rebuild. That's not the case. Goody, I'm telling you, he is right on track with how he's building this team. And I'm excited about it. So I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast today. Really appreciate your time tuning in. And hope you enjoyed the history segment. I'll tell you, that Herb Adderley story, that's, man, what a superstar. It's always a blast, you know, digging into that stuff. Again, thanks to Ben on Twitter. I hope I get that name right. Yes, Ben. Thanks again, man, for the feedback. Always appreciate that. And it's funny, man, when you guys bring up topics like this, they tend to be some of my favorite segments because even just digging into those PFF grades, I went in not knowing how everything was going to lay out. I may have gotten in there and be like, oh, crap, yeah, this doesn't look good. But everything kind of laid out into place that, okay, that's the expectation. So, Ben, because you asked that question and put me in a position to kind of do the legwork to look into that, I'm feeling a lot better and knowing now going into the season, all right, these two rookies, these first-round picks, Wyatt and Walker, let's see if they can finish in the 67s. And who knows, you might hit a home run like a Micah Parsons and they just go absolutely ballistic. I'm not expecting that, right? I'm curbing the enthusiasm there and the expectation. But again, if he finishes in the 60s and the 70s, then they're looking like good, solid draft picks. Look for Stokes to make that next step into the 70s this year. That would be awesome. Again, this was something that was triggered by a podcast that Ryan did, you know, probably about a month ago now, where he really broke down the PFF grades and how Eric Stokes and was right on par with kind of with Jair. That was another one I wanted to check out. As a matter of fact, I'll do that right now as we end this show. Jair Alexander's rookie season was a 72.4. His sophomore season in 2019, 73. And then, of course, in 2020, he jumped to a 90.5. So, again, you know, upper 60s, lower 70s, looking like an absolute stub moving forward. Let's hope that those two rookie first-round picks perform somewhere in that ballpark. So, again, guys, thanks for listening to the show. Make sure you hit us up on Twitter. Again, that handle is @Packers_access. We got some cool stuff coming up here real soon. I don't want to ruin it. I'm still ironing out some details, but I'm really, really excited to bring you guys an announcement soon. So keep your ear to Twitter for that. But as always, let's go out and be the change that we want to see in the world. Thanks for listening, and go Pack, go.
Third down, inches to go. The Vader, 17 to 14. Cowboys out in front. Starr begins the count. Takes the snap. He's got the quarterback. He gets the touchdown. The Packers are not in front. And the Green Bay Packers are going to be world champions.
Keep keep the change. Roadhouse.